Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Plug it in. Come feel that energy. Energy creating a synergy within my memory. Tendencies to remedies. Overthrowing our enemies. More explosive than the weather underground back in the 70s. Walking for centuries with total intensity. When I rhyme, it's like the wind blowing through a turbine. Every word I'm spitting is a paradigm rewritten. Based in fact, not fiction. My depiction is a vision. None other than living color. Whatever a rhyme is uttered. Reset it. Energy manifested as kinetic. You never regret it. Vibe from the crowd is electric. Energy's overflowing, exploding like supernovas. Plug it in, come feel that energy.
Junkyard Empire getting us underway today on Route 51 as we look ahead to this weekend's 28th annual Midwest Renewable Energy Fair. I'm Glenn Moberg. Each year, Custer, Wisconsin, a tiny hamlet on Highway 10 east of Stevens Point, becomes a buzzing alternative energy metropolis, attracting thousands of people from all walks of life with one thing in common: concern for the future of the planet. This year's fair, as always, will delve into technologies old and new, from wind power to electric cars, with a lineup of speakers, workshops, musicians, and food vendors that will more than fill up 3 days of activity. Here in our studio, we have Nick Hyla, Executive Director of the Renewable Energy Association, and two of this year's keynote speakers. Kerry Leiterson is a Chicago-based staff writer for Midwest Energy News and co-director of the Social Justice News Nexus at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. And Chris Holman owns and operates Nami Moon Farms of Custer and serves on the board of directors of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Later in the show, we'll also hear from keynote speaker Erica Mackey. She is the CEO and co-founder of Grid Alternatives, the nation's largest nonprofit solar installer. As always, we want to hear from you. If you got a question or a comment for our guests, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put something on our Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. So thank you all for being with us, not just with us, but with us here in the studio, which makes for a much better conversation than if I had to pick up with one or two of you on the telephone. Kerry, that goes out to you because you had to come here from the Chicago area.
Thanks so much for having us, Glenn.
Yeah, Nick, happy to be here.
Yeah, Nick, we've had some very wet weather in central Wisconsin over the past few days. How are the grounds holding out?
We're doing just fine. Spirits are up. We're ready for the masses to show up. So please come on over. We're ready for you.
This is the 28th year for the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair. Your thoughts on where you've been, where you are right now, and where you're going?
Yeah, it's a very interesting time to be working at the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. As you mentioned, this is our 28th fair, and the organization was started actually in response to the first Gulf War and a call to action at that time in a national publication called Home Power for local education on energy issues and to empower communities to adopt appropriate technologies and understand their energy use and build local economies based on local energy. And so for a long time, we were the odd outfit just outside of Stevens Point. But if you've been paying attention, at least in recent years, the last 5 years, there is a widespread mass adoption of renewable energy in all sectors. And to note, in 2015 and 2016, more solar and wind energy was put onto the grid, so more new capacity than any other energy source, coal, natural gas. We are part of a nationwide revolution moving towards a clean energy economy. So I guess what makes it different this year is we feel a little more pressure.
Pressure? I thought you were going to come up with the word mainstream.
Yeah,
there.
Mainstream maybe is also, though we may not look at yet.
Something big for your organization this year, you're actually putting on a second energy fair, this one in St. Paul, Minnesota, on September 9th and 10th. Why a second energy fair?
Ah, it's so nice we're doing it twice. One of the reasons is that Minnesota has led Midwest states in solar development last year. In 2013, they passed a legislation called the Minnesota Solar Energy Jobs Act, which developed a policy framework that will allow customers, any interested parties across much of Minnesota to access solar, whether you have a home or not through what they call community solar gardens. And so they're developing a tremendous amount of solar, and we thought it was a very appropriate time to engage in Minnesota to help consumers connect with businesses and understand opportunities to help usher in ideas about community solar and community access for all. And we also have another keynote speaker at the fair in Wisconsin this year, and we'll also be at Minnesota, Jason Edens. And their company, REAL, the Renewable Energy Alliance, pioneered community solar for community access, which allows low-income residents to access the bill energy bill savings of solar over the life of systems. Mm-hmm. So we're really excited about the solar market in Minnesota, and so we decided we'd do an energy fair there too.
How will it be different from this fair that's coming up this weekend in Custer? How will it be similar?
Maybe you could ask me on September 11th. We'd know how it turns out. I guess it's at a beautiful park just across from downtown St. Paul. It's called Harriet Island Park. Gorgeous facility. I think we'll have a lot of the same workshop content, new bands, new speakers, Minnesota focus. But I think you can expect the same what we call edutainment, the mixture of education, family-friendly, fun for all, music, and of course, good beer.
Edutainment. I love it. I love it. I'm going to steal that. It's what we try to do here on Route 51. How big of a job is this to put on a second fair? You know, you've got your hands full with this one coming up this weekend.
Is that planted from my staff? They've been giving me a hard time about this for months. Yeah, it's a lot of work, but we benefit from having a tremendous cadre of volunteers that help us. So shout out to all you that are prepping the fairgrounds right now and listening to this program. Thank you so much. We couldn't do it without you. And we'll need volunteers in Minnesota also. So this is really a human-powered effort.
And you've got a big keynote speaker Saturday night, J.B. Staubel, who is really the driving force between Tesla.
Yeah, so he is the co-founder of Tesla and their chief technology officer. He grew up in Wisconsin, and he's a success story. He's taken this dream coming from his childhood as a tinkerer, and he created a company that is revolutionizing how we think about energy. And you know, if you're familiar with Tesla, they now employ more people as a company than the entire coal sector across the U.S. They're building some of the biggest factories in the world and doubling the production of lithium-ion batteries. They're halving the costs of their cars, every model that they put out, and they're revolutionizing solar and storage and moving us towards the future, which is electric. And so we're really excited to have him come to the fair and talk. He'll be speaking on Saturday night at 6 p.m. on the main stage.
Nick Hyla of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. If you just joined us, we're talking about the Energy Fair, which takes place this weekend in Custer, Wisconsin. We've got two of the other keynotes with us this morning. Carrie Leiterson, you'll be speaking Saturday at 1 p.m. What will you be talking about?
Yeah, I'll be talking partly about the growth of solar, distributed solar specifically in Wisconsin, and covering that sector, how it's really changed drastically, the outlook from 2 or 3 years ago when, because of the political climate in Wisconsin, it was people were telling me, developers and advocates were telling me that solar could actually be killed in Wisconsin. And then 2 years later, it's a total 180-degree turn in this big success story. So I'll talk about some of the reasons for that.
Well, what are some of the reasons? How did that happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think what it actually shows is just that all the reasons that distributed solar makes sense kind of triumphed over the roadblocks that the utilities and the Public Service Commission, which was pretty much doing the bidding of the utilities, and the governor and, you know, political forces that were skeptical of climate change or denying climate change, and also, you know, on the utilities side as big businesses, they tried to implement different rate policies and other things that would have made it much harder, did have made it much harder mm-hmm. for distributed solar. But nonetheless, just the market forces and the fact that so many people want solar has meant that it's, you know, it's been this success story.
Well, we when the governor was elected, he also put restrictions into place on where you could site wind farms,
right.
And that pretty much killed the wind energy business in Wisconsin. You're the leader of the Social Justice News Nexus at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. What is that, and what are you trying to accomplish there?
Yeah, so that's a program where professional journalists work together with grad students at Medill to do in-depth stories on different focus topics. And we've tackled drug policy and mental health and some criminal justice issues. And most recently, over the past year, we've been focused on energy and environmental justice in the Chicago area.
And you're also a writer for Midwest Energy News. Tell us about that organization.
Yeah, well, I love working for Midwest Energy News. It's it covers Midwest Energy News and with a big focus on this transition to clean energy that we're talking about and kind of combination of policy and technology and more in the weeds than kind of mainstream publications, but still accessible, I think. So, yeah, I would recommend people read it.
And Chris Holman, you'll also be speaking Saturday at 9:15 in the morning. You're a farmer, so that doesn't bother you, right?
Not too much. No.
What are you going to be talking about?
I'm going to kind of challenge the notion of community in the sense that when you look at politics now and the way people are grappling with issues like renewable energy or anything these days, people like to say they have a community or that they're within one, but really I kind of see it more like we're having more of a trench warfare type approach. And so I want to talk about that a little bit and then kind of expand it to say here's kind of how we've been approaching these issues via trench warfare, which tends to get you nowhere, and then offer up alternatives that are more community-oriented.
And so instead of being antagonistic toward the people who might not share your goals, you're going to try to reach out and give them a big bear hug? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm not going to have a naive message really. The idea is to try to find more constructive ways forward. And so I think the trench warfare approach that you see has kind of easily predictable results, whereas if you can find more non-traditional allies, let's say, then you can find inroads in places that you might not find them, especially in rural America where I think you're not seeing – even though it feels that way, it's not as deeply entrenched, this sort of left-right, red-blue kind of warfare.
You also are the owner of Nami Moon Farms, which is located in Custer, a stone's throw away from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. You're a diversified livestock farm on 41 acres. You also raise fruits and vegetables. What sets you apart? What do you do differently? What's your philosophy?
For us, we have a wide open range system for our poultry and for our hogs, really. We raise everything on pasture. We rotate around the pasture, and so that every iteration has a new piece of ground. And then we also don't confine them. So rather than having chicken tractors, they're called, that you pull across the pasture, we've got livestock guardian dogs that hang out with the animals and allow the animals to freely range wherever they like. And that removes a lot of labor for me, which is good, and that also gives the birds more of quality of life from our perspective.
Chris Holman, Carrie Leiterson, and Nick Hyla, our guests today as we talk about the Energy Fair happening this weekend in Custer, Wisconsin. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. Our lines are wide open right now, and as always, you will find it easier to get through at this time than later on in the show when a lot of people tend to call. It's 1-800-780-9742. If you've got thoughts about renewable energy, if you've been to the Energy Fair, if you like what these folks are doing, we'd love to hear from you. And you can also put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. Nick, tell us about the other keynote speakers. Jonathan Seaborn, he's the coordinator of the documentary Between Earth and Sky, and he's speaking Friday evening at 7.
Yes, and they'll be previewing the documentary, and that's a documentary about climate change that looks at habitats ranging from the North Pole across the U.S. with interviews. So very engaging and interesting. So those of you that are interested in looking at the not only the research but the human stories of climate change, that will be on Friday night. We also have and I believe you'll play a clip with Erica Mackey from Great Alternatives.
And
they are a very ambitious and successful nonprofit solar installation firm that focuses on solar installations for low to moderate income multifamily and single family households. And so they will most likely be a common name in Illinois soon with the Illinois Future Energy Jobs Act that passed and a lot of money That will be dedicated to training and workforce development for low-income people to come into the solar industry. And what you'll probably hear throughout the Energy Fair is the job creation successes and continued potential of the solar industry. If you look at just in 2016, 1 in 50 new jobs in the United States was a solar job. So of every 50 jobs created, one of them was in solar. They're local. They're good paying. They're hard to export, and they redirect investment into local infrastructure and value improvement on properties. So, so that Erica, I'm sure, will talk, and we have a solar.
And we'll talk about that in more detail when we play her clip a little bit later in the show. You've also got a tribute to Richard Perez. That's tonight, Thursday night at the Network Dinner. Tell us about Richard and his work on the first Energy Fair back in 1990.
Yeah, so I had referenced this call to action that went out in Hold Power magazine, and that call to action was written by Richard Perez, and he called for communities across the country, and to reference Chris's previous statement, to actually work with your community and bring in non-traditional stakeholders and people to discuss and have open discussions about energy. And that's transitioned, at least in central Wisconsin, into the Energy Fair, which is the largest and longest running renewable energy education event in the country. And so Richard is seen by us as kind of our clarion call. You know, and our founders they read the article, they got together in a local farm kitchen, and they hosted the first Energy Fair. And here we sit 28 years later.
And as always, you've got some entertainment. The critically acclaimed Davina and the Vagabonds Friday night.
Oh, I love them. You have to see them on Friday. They are amazing.
She's a trip, isn't she?
Yeah, they are. Not only are they great and high energy, but they are excellent musicians and big attitude, and that's a must see performance.
And then Central Wisconsin string band Sloppy Joe on Saturday night.
Yeah, that's when it gets crazy. So if you want to come out for the let loose, shake off the winter cobwebs, that's the time to do it.
And also Saturday night, Fox Valley native Corey Chisel. He's a singer-songwriter. And Adriel Dene, am I pronouncing your last
name
right?
Yes, and he's known for starting the Mile of Music in the Fox Valley. And they are soulful, heartfelt, gorgeous Midwest vocals and blues acoustic. And they might make you cry.
1-800-780-9742. Let's go to the phones. Bobby in Stevens Point, you're on Route 51.
Oh, hey, thanks for having me. Yeah, I just wanted to mention that I'll be giving a workshop on Friday, 2:30, in the Blue Tent, and the topic is legalized regional transit authorities, and the features of this idea are that it will be grassroots-driven, citizen-organized effort to put pressure on the legislature and the governor to re-legalize regional transit. Because we had it briefly authorized for 2 years, from 2009 to 2011, and then the legislature came in fully funded by energy money, I believe, and they took that out of the statutes right away so that fossil fuel interests continue running the transportation system.
All right, Bobby, when is that workshop?
9:30. I'm sorry. 2:30 on Friday.
All right. All right. Thanks for the call, Bobby. We appreciate it. Carrie, what do you think of this concept of regional transit networks and the fact that some of them need a little bit of nurturing?
Yeah, you know, I haven't covered transit that closely myself, but I know that's, you know, a lot of people are saying that the battle over energy has actually been won or is on the way to being won, and transit and transportation is the frontier that we really have to focus on now in terms of reducing emissions and pollution. So, makes sense.
There you go. We're talking about this weekend's 28th Annual Energy Fair with Nick Hyla, the Renewable Energy Association, author and journalist Kerry Leiterson, and Chris Holman of NAMI Moon Farms and the Wisconsin Farmers Union. I'm Glenn Moberg. We want to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. When we come back, we're going to hear from another of the event's keynote speakers, Erica Mackey of Grid Alternatives, the nation's largest nonprofit solar installer. We'll be back after this short break. Here's Jerry Reed.
Well, now listen, people, let me tell you some news. I sang a song called the Crude Oil Blues. We're low on heat and all, we're low on gas. And I'm so cold, I'm about to freeze by myself. We got the crude oil blues. Called the winter time show, getting cold to the bottom of my shoes. Well, my hands are shaking and my knees are weak. But it ain't because of love, it's from the lack of heat. I got the crude oil blues.
Support for WPR comes from the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin Foster Care Program, dedicated to helping thousands of Wisconsin foster kids connect with caring families. More about being a foster parent is at chw.org/TFC. Support also comes from attorneys Sturgill and Long, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and the Michigan Upper Peninsula. Information is at
Sheryl Crow taking us into our next segment of Route 51 as we discuss this weekend's 28th Annual Energy Fair in Custer, east of Stevens Point, with Nick Hyla of the Renewable Energy Association, author and journalist Kerry Leiterson, Chris Holman of NAMI Moon Farms, and the Wisconsin Farmers Union. I'm Glenn Moberg. That phone number again, 1-800-780-9742. And Chris, you wrote a blog a few weeks ago at the Wisconsin Farmers Union website, in which you commented on the trade dispute with Canada over ultra-filtered milk. The headline was Milking Scapegoats. Tell us about that.
Sure. It was a piece that was kind of looking at American agricultural policy and when Canada decided to kind of renegotiate how it treated this product, it ended up closing off some of the imports via America. And so people started pointing the finger at America and at Canada for the problems that were occurring, and namely dairy farmers were just getting dropped unceremoniously via kind of unsigned letters from their processors. So basically, I reframed it by pointing out that it's not Canadian trade policy that's the issue. It's the fact that we overproduce so many of our commodities here. And so there's no market. The prices are down. And yet, despite the fact the prices are down and we're in a glut, we continue to have this kind of full throttle aspect to produce as much as you can. And it has predictable results.
And it got a lot of airplay in Canada, you're telling me.
Yeah, sure did. It got picked up locally. USA Today covered all the pieces I wrote about this. And then the Canadians loved it. I was on radio shows up there in five different provinces. A Canadian broadcast company called me too. It was quite the couple weeks, really.
And you write in that blog that the cards are stacked against the farmers. What do you mean by that?
I mean that when it comes to this situation where you have overproduction, literally everyone in the supply chain has things that they can use to cover their own, you know, butts. But the farmer is often left out. So the farmer's left trying to figure out, how do I negotiate these complex situations where I have to worry about Canadian trade policy, for instance, when all I'm trying to do is keep producing high-quality milk, get it to an end user that's been using it for a long time, and then not end up in a situation where I'm being kicked out of the industry because of some sort of decision that's been made far beyond any sort of thing I can perceive at my level.
Well, we've got a phone call about agriculture right now. Tony in Athens. Is this Tony of Stony Acres Farm, if I could venture a guess?
You got me, Glenn. I was going to use my alter ego, but I did my actual name.
What's your question, Tony?
I have a question for Nick and a question for Chris. My question for Chris is, what policy change would you make American agriculture to help it move toward environmental sustainability? What's the big change that you would have American agriculture undergo to move us toward environmental sustainability, a real substantive change? And Nick, my question for you is, the market is moving a lot of solar development now, but people talk about how it's more efficient in Arizona to have solar or more efficient in Nebraska to have wind. But in Wisconsin, people still make the economic argument that coal is the most efficient. What is the pushback on that argument that coal is the most efficient energy in Wisconsin?
All right, Tony, let's go to Kerry first. What policy changes would you like to see for agriculture?
For agriculture, well, I know, you know, at least on the energy front, wind and solar can be such great things for farmers. So anything that helps them install and, you know, get a fair shake from the energy they're sending back to the grid would be a great thing both for the farmers and for the energy world.
And Nick, what about what you hear a lot of times in Wisconsin? Coal is the future. You know, nothing will ever supplant coal.
Well, interestingly, Wisconsin does not have any domestic sources of coal. So we import all our coal from western or eastern states. We do have, right in our state, wind and solar, and we have plenty of it. And when it comes to economics, you hear a lot of bluster about coal and gas industry. The reality is that energy is not getting any cheaper. The reason that coal plants are closing has nothing to do with regulation. It has everything to do with price. And a lot of that price is because wind and solar are now some of the most affordable energy on the electric grid. Interestingly, you don't also see people installing coal-fired power plants next to their homes or businesses, but you do see people putting solar on their roofs. And so as Kerry mentioned before, this distributed nature of solar where you satisfy the electrical load at its point. So when I have a solar PV system on my house, when the sun shines, it provides me electricity first and then my neighbors. And so we don't have to ship it for hundreds and hundreds of miles. Another thing I would say about solar is that it's modular, scalable, has no moving parts. It's been a technology that's been around for a long time, creates local economic development, hires local people, doesn't emit pollution, fixed costs. I could probably go on.
Tony, thanks so much for the phone call. Kerry, you covered a story this past week for Midwest Energy News about a Milwaukee area subdivision, Red Fox Crossing, which will require solar installations on every home. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and the require was kind of my word. I don't think they use that word. They probably maybe wouldn't want to, but because, you know, they're seeing it and presumably their buyers of these homes will be seeing it also as an asset, you know, not a requirement. That's one of the selling points. But since the homes are going to be built, you know, once they're sold, to me as a journalist, one of my questions was, can you guarantee these homes are really going to have solar? You know, can I be sure this is more than a press release? So it is in the deed that the homes will all have solar. And so the significance of that is that the developer thinks that, you know, solar is so popular that it will be a major selling point for these homes. And then also financing is one of the big obstacles for installing solar and one of the ways that policy has made it harder. But when you put the solar on from the ground up, then it's in the mortgage and you hardly even notice what you're paying for it.
And Nick, your keynote speaker Friday afternoon, Erica Mackey has managed to create and grow the world's biggest nonprofit installer to become one of Solar Systems. Grid Alternatives are based in Oakland, California. I recorded an interview with her. Let's listen to it right now and we'll come back on the other side and talk about Erica Mackey, Grid Alternatives, and what she does. She installs solar systems for poor people, people who normally wouldn't be able to afford them.
Grid Alternatives is a nonprofit organization, and we install solar electric systems in and with low-income communities. And we do that with a workforce development model where communities and folks who are interested in getting jobs in the growing energy sector can come out and actually participate in an installation and get that hands-on job training to get a job in the solar industry. We got our start in a, you know, small, what I would consider kitchen table operation in California. I started the organization with a colleague, and from there, word really just spread, and, you know, the first 10 people who came out to an install and the first family that went solar with Grid Alternatives, we had to really cajole them and convince them to be an early adopter. But then after that, you know, those 10 people told 10 people who told 10 people, and that family told their neighbors and their friends and their cousin across town. And we grew incredibly rapidly.
And you call what you do a barn-raising model for installing electrical systems. What exactly do you mean by that? What is a barn-raising model, and how does it work?
Well, barn-raising in our world is a little bit taking from what I know very well, having grown up in Michigan, which is when you need to get something done, bring a potluck dish and roll up your sleeves and get it done. And for Grid Alternatives, that's our model, that, you know, this is not technology for outer space. This is something that all of us can benefit from. And if we want to get that done, why don't we ask our neighbors and ask the kid down the street that needs a job? And we all come out together and as a community build solar on folks' rooftops. And so it's that kind of, you know, community building, getting together. Every installation Grid Alternatives does is basically a block party of sorts, and really making change happen one rooftop at a time.
Is it a tough sell for poor people to tell them that, you know, while they're worried about things like putting food on the table and just getting by day to day, that they ought to be worried about having solar energy?
I think all of us care about similar things. You know, we care about more money in our pockets. We care about leaving a cleaner world to our children or our neighbors' children or our grandchildren. You know, folks who would be considered living on lower incomes are no different. And in fact, are often really environmental in their decisions because they are the ones who have been breathing dirty air or have, you know, neighborhoods that are crisscrossed by highways or, you know, the sort of the environmental becomes very local. It's not about melting polar ice caps. It's really about, you know, what's in my neighborhood, what's in my air. And so we've found that folks that, you know, can really benefit from solar might not have thought that solar was something for them, but certainly are interested in being part of building a clean economy and of definitely, you know, leveraging those panels to do good and lift up their community and their family.
What are you going to be talking about, Erica, in your keynote speech at the Energy Fair?
I'll be talking at the Energy Fair more broadly about equity and climate and how we can, if we, you know, think about things from the grassroots, the local, and how that's so important these days, how really people can come together and make incredible change, and the way that putting equity at the forefront really builds all of us up. And, you know, so it's going to be sort of the story of Grid Alternatives, but the story of equity in the clean energy space and how you can't separate jobs from economic prosperity from climate change. All of those things go hand in hand. And, you know, what Grid does that's so magical is we take single projects that you can really, you know, see, you can touch, you can just hold the drill, you can get done in a couple of days, and bring those things together. So it's about jobs, it's about people saving money, and it's about all of us doing what's right for our Earth.
It's Erica Mackey, the co-founder and CEO of Grid Alternatives, the nation's largest nonprofit installer of solar systems, and she will be speaking tomorrow, Friday afternoon, at the Energy Fair. Carrie, what's your reaction to what you just heard?
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to her more because in Illinois with this energy bill and just in general, that equity and, you know, sort of social justice angle on energy is something that I'm super interested in, and I think it's really important. The utility companies in many cases have tried to frame solar as something that's elitist and that lower income people can't get. So, you know, it's great that people are showing that's not true.
And one of the things she said that didn't make it on air, but I'm going to bring it up here, she said one of the reasons Grid Alternatives has been able to do what it does is because of public policy decisions in California where the state actually encourages the nonprofit installation of solar systems.
Yeah, and that's something where legislatures and public service commissions can, you know, and utilities themselves can make this happen, as opposed to just claiming that, you know, it's impossible for people who don't have their own rooftops or for lower income people. So California should be an example for these other states.
Chris, what's your reaction?
What I was hearing is you get a lot of the same accusations of elitism at like farmers markets and smaller kind of niche production of food. And so from the agricultural perspective, it seems like it lines up almost the same way, and that people feel like it's a part of the world that's not for them, something they can't have access to, when in reality, if you dive a little deeper and, you know, create those sort of connections that need to be created, then you find ways forward that aren't necessarily intuitive to anybody involved.
And Nick, your reaction?
Yeah, we you know, solar is a technology, and just like an electric vehicle is, and the industry nationwide does suffer from access because it costs money. You basically buy your energy, clean energy, up front in the form of a technology, and so making it accessible to people who actually need it the most, people who would love to have more energy security and need more energy security to fix their energy bills, has a challenge, and one that the industry-wide is taking up and that we're very passionate about. And that is why we are very excited to have Erica come and talk, because they combine the two things that we work at at the MREA, is workforce development and training and empowering people and giving energy, renewable energy, to people who need it the most.
Chris on Facebook writes, I lived in Poinette, directly downwind from the Portage coal-fired power plant. Everything, he writes, including our lungs, was covered in this red goo. The health implications are astronomical. Carrie, that's what you were saying.
Yeah, I used to live Chicago's two coal-fired power plants closed in 2012, and I lived a couple blocks from one of them. And I didn't notice red goo, but I noticed a lot of black soot all over everything in my apartment, probably in my lungs.
And you wrote a book about that, about the closure of those coal power plants. Tell us about the book.
Yeah, so it you know, it was a lot about what Nick mentioned earlier, the way that coal has just become not economical. And there was a really exciting, pretty amazing grassroots movement for more than a decade pushing for those coal plants in Chicago to close. And that raised a lot of awareness and was really important. And then, interesting, sort of ironically, the plants actually closed even before the deadline that was eventually set politically for them to close, just because of the economics.
And the title of the book is Closing the Cloud Factories, Lessons from the Fight to Shut Down Chicago's Coal Plants. It was published in June of 2014. And Carrie Leiterson, you are the author. And you also wrote that in a lot of ways, it took a coalition of neighborhood activists to make this happen.
Yeah, and an interesting thing about this whole story is how grassroots groups and neighborhood activists work together with big green, you know, quote unquote, big green groups, larger groups, and how through this struggle, they also worked out some of their differences and, you know, learned some lessons that carry over to other struggles. So this was a real environmental justice issue and something that people living around the coal plants raised even before, you know, international and national groups made the Chicago plants an issue.
And we also have a link to Chris Holman's blog post about the milk trade policy issue that we were talking about. That's on the Route 51 Facebook page. Let's go to the phones. We have Warren and Mercer, who's been waiting patiently. Warren, you're on Route 51.
Hi. Nice to talk to you guys this morning. I have a question. Are you going to basically video the presentations for use on University of the Air? Or for schools?
That's a good question. I don't think we here have any plans to do that, but it's a good idea. Nick Hyla?
Yeah, we record the presentations every year and make them public. And so you'll be able to see those on the Midwest Renewable Energy's YouTube channel.
Okay, good.
All right. Warren,
yeah, another thing is I do have solar on my house in New Mexico, and I think the most exciting thing about that was, one, we don't have a power bill, we're grid tied, and the other is watching the meter run backwards when the sun is working. So And we have attended, my wife and I have attended the energy fair we're going to do again this year, and bought a solar cooker while we were there. And the final issue is the Mercer Library is attempting to put solar on or by the library, and so they're having some difficulties getting it approved, but it's the one form of energy that basically doesn't pollute and has no moving parts. I think a person earlier said that. And it pays back because your power bills aren't going to go down any time in the future that I know of.
Warren, thanks so much for the phone call and your comments. I would mention that the T.B. Scott Library in Merrill just completed a very ambitious solar installation. I'm Glenn Moberg. We are talking about this weekend's 28th Annual Energy Fair with Nick Hyla of the Renewable Energy Association, author and journalist Carrie Leiderson, Chris Holman of Nami Moon Farms and the Wisconsin Farmers Union. And we're going to take a short break right now, but we will be back with Vinny in Stevens Point. Hang on to the phones, Vinny. We'll get to you next. Meanwhile, they might be giants.
Support for WPR comes from The Energy Fair, with workshops and exhibitors focused on sustainability. Featuring keynote J.B. Straubel, co-founder of Tesla, June 16th through the 18th in Custer, Wisconsin. TheEnergyFair.org. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-Law.com.
It's nature's way of telling you something's wrong. Just nature's way, it's nature's way. It's nature's way, it's nature's way. It's nature's way of telling something's wrong.
Spirit taking us into our final segment of Route 51 as we talk about this weekend's 28th Annual Energy Fair in Custer, east of Stevens Point, with Nick Hyla of the Renewable Energy Association, author and journalist Carrie Leiderson, and Chris Holman of Nami Moon Farms. I'm Glenn Moberg. Well, you could say that climate change is nature's way of telling us something's wrong, but, Carrie, some people aren't paying attention.
To that, that's true.
What do you think of the president's decision to pull out of the Paris Climate Accords? How damaging is that to not just the future of the planet, but the renewable energy movement?
You know, it sounds like it may not be that. I mean, not to understate its massive importance in a lot of ways, but I've been hearing mostly positive outlooks about how the renewable energy markets and technology and world will just keep going despite that, both in the U.S. and then in the other countries that are taking leadership and actually excited to jump in and fill the void that Trump has left in leadership.
35 state representatives and 11 state senators in Wisconsin this week signed onto a letter to Governor Walker asking him to join the U.S. Climate Alliance and implement a state-based plan to fight climate change and create green jobs. Nick Hyla, unsurprisingly, all of them were Democrats. And there seems to be a partisan divide on this issue, which I didn't see 10, 20 years ago when a lot of Republicans acknowledged that climate change was a problem, that we need to do something about it.
Yeah, we have a leadership vacuum on energy issues in the Republican Party. And for us in Wisconsin, where we have a Republican-led state House, Assembly, and Senate, it really is a disservice. And we could talk about the issues that lead to that. They're kind of pervasive. They start probably with the FEC versus Citizens United decision at the Supreme Court. That's exacerbated kind of some of the industry lobby influence over our political parties. But I think I want to follow up a bit to the Paris Climate Agreement and say I think what there is no stopping the march towards clean energy. We are in a global race for national dominance in clean energy innovation and manufacturing. And so I don't think that, you know, one hapless decision to pull us out of a leadership role in the Paris Climate Agreement is going to affect that. However, I think what I'd like to say to people listening is that there are real benefits to all of us when we are a nation that leads and that creates coalitions and that provides vision. And what I see happening now is the opposite of that. We seem to be retreating and putting up walls and boundaries and focusing on talking points and not taking advantage of the tremendous opportunities in front of us. And other countries will do that and we'll be left behind in the dark.
Chris Holman?
I think there's a real missed opportunity here in the sense that, like from farmer perspective, farmers, no matter their political stripe, are adapting to climate change. They're doing it on their fields. A lot of them are doing it from a season-to-season approach. So the long-term thinking might not be there. But I think if you provide more stability in general with markets and whatnot, you open up opportunities for those adaptations to kind of branch into mitigation. And so reframing it in some ways could help get more support from that side of the aisle.
And we want to mention that if you're looking at the Route 51 Facebook page, we now have a link there to Kerry Leiterson's book about the coal power plants in the Chicago area. Let's take a call from Vinny in Stevens Point, who has been waiting patiently. Vinny, you've got a question about the workshops.
Well, actually, I just have a reminder about the workshops. Thanks for taking my call, and hi, guys. There is a groundwater in Wisconsin panel discussion on Friday morning from 10 until 12. We have a two-hour panel, and it basically has all the major policymakers, folks, you know, who are going down to Madison lobbying. There's farmers, there's scientists, all the major folks in Portage County who are deciding water policy in central Wisconsin. And I just want to encourage people to come and bring a poignant question and to come and be respectful and hope to – somebody said something about walls being put up. I think it was Nick. The goal here is to tear those walls down because there is a divide right now between activists and farmers. And what I'm striving to do here by getting all these people together with my informal beer summit is to tear down those walls and revive neighborliness, because what I've seen being active in this issue for a while now is that we've forgotten how to be neighbors, and we have to remember that the people that are sitting across the table from us are our neighbors, they are our friends, they are our community, and there's only one way out of this water controversy, and that is doing it together.
So, all right, Vinny, we got it. Thanks so much for the call. We got to move on. We're going to take one more question from Sally and Adam. Sally, you got to make it quick. We're running out of time here.
Yes, my question was, are there going to be any hydropower exhibits at the energy fair?
Nick, that's for you.
I don't know, frankly, if there will be a large focus on that. There are always there's always interest there. I will note that in Wisconsin and much of the country, the power purchase agreements for hydro dams are up for renegotiation under what's called the Public Utility Regulatory Protection Act, PURPA, and it's not looking good, and it may not be looking good for PURPA, the law that has allowed private parties to connect to monopoly-owned grid territories all across the country as qualified generators and sell their power. And so there will be discussion of that and discussion about the future of PURPA and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission in the age of the Trump administration.
All right. Very good. We're down to our last 30 seconds here, folks. Kerry, any final thoughts?
I'm just excited to check out the fair. Thank you.
All right. And Chris?
Same here. We live right around the corner, so it's always something we look forward to.
And Nick, tell people what they need to know about what's coming up this weekend and why maybe they need to attend.
Well, you should just come early. Stay long. It's we have it on good word that it's going to be beautiful weather. It's the largest gathering of nice people in Wisconsin, I think, throughout the year. Don't yell at me for that. We'll be there and waiting for you with smiles on our faces and ready to talk about a new clean energy future.
For I have the war.
thank today's guests, Nick Hyla, Executive Director of the Renewable Energy Association, Kerry Leiterson, author, staff writer for Midwest Energy News, and an instructor at Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism, and Chris Holman of NAMI Moon Farms of Custer and the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Thanks also to Erica Mackey, CEO and co-founder of Grid Alternatives. The Energy Fair takes place this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in Custer, Wisconsin, east of Stevens Point on Highway 10, and you can find out more at theenergyfair.org. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by The Fifth Dimension, The Grateful Dead, Junkyard Empire, Jerry Reed, Sheryl Crow, They Might Be Giants, Spirit, and The Beach Boys. Thanks again for riding along with us today in our electric car. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we're heading out of town. Just like they're still there.